Bribey English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Salman Rushdie, the British author of a blasphemous anti-Islam book, is stabbed at an event in the U.S. state of New York. Officials believe the suspect acted alone. Iran says an oil tanker operating on its flag is reloading oil confiscated by the United States in Greece. Also ahead, supporters of Iraqi political factions hold rival rallies in the capital, Baghdad, amid a deadlock over the formation of a new government. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. Top story this hour. Salman Rushdie, the author of an anti-Islam book, has been attacked on stage at an event in the U.S. state of New York. A man stabbed the blasphemous novelist in the neck and abdomen when he was about to give a lecture. Rushdie is now on a ventilator, and his agent says he suffered damage to his liver and one eye. The suspected attacker has been detained. Police, however, say they have no indication of a motive.
We don't have any indication of a motive at this time, but we are working with the FBI, the sheriff's office, and we will determine what the cause of this was or what the motive for this attack was.
Police have identified the attacker as 24-year-old Hadi Matar from New Jersey. They are assuming he acted alone. Rushdie published his blasphemous novel, The Satanic Verses, in the late 80s. The novel triggered an outcry across the Muslim world. Earlier, we reached out to political commentator Sayyid Mohsen Abbas to get his thoughts on the attack on Salman Rushdie. Have a listen.
Well, Salman had really gone into obscurity, really, relatively speaking, from the time when he first was at the center of arguably the launch of what we regard, often many of us within the deeper commentary circles, regard as the war on Islam or the war on the Muslim world by neoliberal secular establishment on a formal basis. It was obviously a time when, of course, a narrative had to be formed, a narrative that was anti-Iran, anti-Islamic revolution, anti-Ayatollah Khomeini. But the fact is that it got blown out of all proportion, largely because the Western media and the neoliberal agenda it was very much after that kind of vilification of Muslims, of Islam, of Ayatollah Khomeini, and also of really highlighting in a way in their own public's minds a kind of fear of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the revolution that had taken place there. So aside from that broader, deeper state agenda, for which I think that Salman Rushdie very likely was also used, whether it was knowingly or unknowingly, on an individual level, he'd kind of outlived his usefulness. I guess Rushdie takes the inauspicious honor or denigration of being, the first potential tool of Western neoliberal deep state in that process of its war on Islam, the real Islam which talks about justice and talks about governments which should be just and talks about a system which is, you know, anti-risk perhaps, anti-corruption, anti-exploitation of the masses.
An Iranian flag tanker seized by Greece in April is now reloading its oil shipment for return to Iran. Iran's embassy in Athens broke the news, adding that Lana tanker will soon depart for the country. The development comes after the Greek Supreme Court canceled an earlier order for seizure of the consignment. The ship was earlier detained by Greek authorities and its oil cargo was confiscated by the United States in late July. It triggered tensions with Tehran, which called Athens' move an act of robbery. Iran has also detained two Greek tankers for violations in the Persian Gulf waters. The Iranian president says his administration will not tie the country's problem and progress to sanctions or their removal. Ebrahim Raisi says the progress and economy of the country will not be kept back on account of other people's smiles and scowls. He vowed that growth and development would continue forcefully despite enemy threats and sanctions. The Iranian president stressed that the Islamic Republic has never abandoned a negotiation table. He was referring to diplomatic efforts to revive the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA. The agreement was left hanging by a threat after the unilateral U.S. withdrawal from it in 2018 and the reimposition of sanctions on Iran. Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu has revealed that back in October last year, he had held talks with his Syrian counterpart, Faisal Miqdad. During the talks, the top Turkish diplomat has said that the Syrian crisis will be resolved if Damascus holds talks with opposition groups. Rashan Saklam reports from Istanbul.
Turkey's Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu says he had a side talk with Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad on the sidelines of the Non-Aligned Movement Summit in October last year. The Turkish minister added he suggested a reconciliation to take a place between the Syrian government and the opposition, noting that without such a step, Syria will continue to face a crisis. Çavuşoğlu said that the EU and the international community would support a ceasefire in the war-torn country, and that no country would help in Syria's rebuilding process if a ceasefire is not achieved.
To prevent the division of Syria, there must be a strong administration in Syria. The will that can dominate every corner of its lands can only be achieved through unity and solidarity. We need to bring the opposition and government together for reconciliation. There will be no permanent peace otherwise.
Some believe such a revelation is a signal indicating Turkey is preparing for its cross-border military operation in northern Syria. In recent weeks, the Turkish army has been sending reinforcements to northern Syria near the town of Tel Rifat. The town is under the control of Kurdish YPG forces, a U.S.-backed militia that Turkey considers the armed wing of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, known as PKK.
I think the timing of this announcement comes as Turkey's preparing for a cross-border military operation to secure the border area and push back Kurdish forces. A reconciliation between the government and the opposition will not only bring peace to Syria, but also Turkey, a country that has been directly affected by the Syrian war from terrorist attacks to the refugee crisis.
Some analysts believe Turkey has long been serving its own agenda in Syria. For example, by supporting some opposition groups inside Syria who served Ankara's interest in securing its borders and pushing Kurdish forces back. It might be soon to say whether Ankara has changed its strategy in regards with Syria. What is clear for Turkey is that fighting or defeating the Kurdish militants cannot guarantee its security. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Opponents of the Iraqi cleric Muqtada Assad hold a rally in the capital Baghdad amid a deadlock over the formation of a new government. The so-called coordination framework said it would hold an indefinite sit-in to speed up the formation of the new government. The coalition urged all parties to put aside personal interests and adhere to the country's constitution. The protests come 2 weeks after supporters of Saad stormed the parliament and began an open-ended protest there. They have been demanding fresh elections after the coordination framework named a candidate for the premiership. Saad won the most seats in the 2021 parliamentary elections, but last June he asked the bloc's MPs to resign after failing to form a government. The EU foreign policy chief has admitted that the bloc applies double standards when it comes to the wars in Ukraine and Palestine.
We are often criticized for double standards, but international politics is to a large degree about applying double standards. We do not use the same criteria for all problems.
Borrell made the remarks in an interview with a Spanish daily. He was speaking on why Brussels is more willing to help Ukrainians than the people of Gaza. He also said it is the West's, quote, moral imperative to support Kiev against Moscow. Borrell shirked responsibility for resolving the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip, adding that it is out of the EU's hands. Meanwhile, the top official blamed the U.S. for the tensions in occupied Palestinian territories. The U.S. has been a staunch supporter of the Israeli regime. Pro-Palestine activists took to the streets of Austria's capital, Vienna, Amid international fury over Israel's murderous bombing of Gaza, which saw scores of innocent civilians killed. Our correspondent, Robert Carter, has traveled to Vienna and witnessed local action as demands for justice continue to grow.
Hundreds of pro-Palestine activists marched through central Vienna on Friday to vent their anger following Israel's recent bombardment of Gaza. They joined thousands of other protesters worldwide who were shocked into action after the three-day Israeli offensive left over 350 Palestinians wounded, 46 dead, including 16 children, according to Palestinian officials.
Following the recent violence against Gaza, shocking images of children suffering and dying went absolutely viral on social media. Yet despite these disturbing images doing the rounds, they haven't been routinely featured in Western mainstream media circles. In fact, it's incredibly rare for any images of Palestinian suffering to be published at all.
Local activists vented to Press TV over what they say is gross indifference by Western leaders towards Palestinian suffering.
They are suffering every day, every single day. People got arrested, children got arrested, people got murdered. Gaza, what we saw last week in three, 4 days, got bombed. They have no electricity. They have no way to go anywhere. They are blocked from the Israeli occupation.
I need to tell my people that we are standing up for them. We are resisting from abroad. So you have to stay strong. And I'm an artist, so it is a duty for me to raise the voice for the ones who are not heard.
We need to raise our voice, and Austria cooperates with Israel. And that's what we are doing here also is that we want to make people aware of this, that Austria is cooperating with Israel.
Despite regular condemnation of Israeli aggression by human rights groups, Palestinians continue to suffer while the Western world looks on, leaving few options left for Palestinians driven to fight for their very survival. Robert Carter, Vienna.
Household energy bills in Italy are expected to double in the third quarter of 2022 as a consequence of the sanctions on Russia and rising gas prices. Italian families are holding their breath as fears about how they will be able to cover their costs keep mounting. Max Civelli reports from Rome.
Gas bills in Italy will likely double in cost from October the 1st if gas prices continue to rise this way. The recent announcement by power regulator ARERA has gone utterly unnoticed, with the Italian media focusing on the electoral campaign about a month away from the September 25 national elections. A week ago, the outgoing Italian government unveiled a €17 billion aid package aimed at protecting families from surging energy costs and rising consumer prices. However, ARERA and some energy experts have warned that very little has been done so far to reduce energy consumption in the country.
Italy's highly critical energy situation has been downplayed by politicians and the media. On one side, there is confidence about the country achieving its target of reaching storage levels of 90%, while on the other side, the risk that Russia could altogether stop the flow of gas to Italy has been underplayed.
Gas is central to Italy's energy systems. The country even produces over 50% of its electricity from natural gas. Rome has cut its reliance on Russian gas imports to 25% from about 40% at the start of the year, a decision that has thrown the energy sector into uncertainty. Some analysts have predicted annual gas bills could reach an average of €1,800 next year, almost double the annual average of €950 recorded this year. Many Italians are simply bewildered about how they can find themselves in a position of not being able to heat or light their homes.
It's been this way forever. I used to be a unionist. I saw the crisis coming. This is how our country works. We don't have any sovereignty.
Nothing works in this country. We have forever been in the hands of a bunch of swindlers and criminals. Italy has no future.
The outgoing government is planning to offset its dependence on Russian gas by signing new deals with African and Eastern Mediterranean countries and building new regasification plants in a number of Italian sea towns, a move that has met with staunch opposition from local residents. Max Civili, Rome.
The Chinese foreign ministry spokesman said separatist attempts are doomed to fail. Wenbin warned authorities in Taipei against what he called collusion with external forces to seek secession. He said such, quote, provocations will have catastrophic consequences for Taiwan. Tensions have been running high between the two sites since the U.S. House Speaker's visit to Taipei earlier this month. China held its largest ever military drills around the island following the controversial visit. Taiwan also carried out two-day maneuvers in a show of strength. China recently proposed a one-country, two-systems model in order to defuse the tensions, but it was rejected by Taipei.
Tensions are still high between China and Taiwan. The flare-up comes days after the provocative visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to the island. Officials in Chinese Taipei have rejected the one-country, two-systems plan proposed by China for the self-ruled island. Taipei says that only the Taiwanese can decide the island's future. The reaction came after China published a white paper on Taiwan, which Beijing says shows the resolute determination of Beijing to peacefully resolve the unification issue. The paper lays out China's position on the self-ruled island. It says Beijing would never allow any attempt to separate Taiwan, but also would make every effort to achieve unification through peaceful means. Taiwan has accused Beijing of using House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit as, quote, an excuse to destroy the status quo. Pelosi visited the island on August 2nd despite vehement protests from China.
What they want to do with Taiwan is fight, U.S. wants to fight China to the last Taiwanese. If not to the last Japanese, if not enough, then to the last Korean. Ultimately, the U.S. will not fight the wars. It will finance them, it will give weapons, it will antagonize us, it will antagonize both sides, and that's what they want to do, and it's actually a replica to the World War II.
Beijing reacted with an unprecedented burst of military around the island. The drills lasted for several days. Taiwan has also launched live fire drills in the wake of China's largest ever military exercises. The white paper issued by China this week was the third document of its kind over Taiwan. The previous editions were the Taiwan Question and Reunification of China, which was published in 1993, and the One China Principle and the Taiwan Question, which came out in 2000. China insists differences in the social systems in mainland and Taiwan are, quote, neither an obstacle to reunification nor a justification for secessionism. But Beijing says it will not rule out the military option to achieve such reunification.
What China wants to do with this white paper is just to find a way with Taiwan to get it back to its sense, because reunification will happen. The problem is that if it doesn't happen peacefully, it will happen by force. China doesn't want to do it by force, but it's being pushed on the corner by the U.S. because the U.S. is actually slowly declaring Taiwan independent.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. The Israeli regime has attacked Gaza again, and it is time Canadians understood their country's contribution to the brutal treatment of those living in the 360 square kilometer strip of land, says Yves Engler, journalist, in an article published under the heading "Condemn Latest Israeli Regime Attack on Gaza and Canadian Complicity." Stay tuned for more. The Israeli regime has attacked Gaza again, and it is time Canadians understood their country's contribution to the brutal treatment of those living in the 360 square kilometer strip of land. On August 5th, the Zionist regime killed at least 10, including a 5-year-old girl, in Gaza. 75 more Palestinians were injured in the latest outburst of Israeli violence. Most of those living in Gaza were driven from their homes in 1947 to 48. Canada played a central role in drafting and promoting the 1947 UN Partition Plan, which legitimized the Zionist movement's ethnic cleansing. Before that, Royal Military College of Canada graduate Charles McPherson Double commanded Britain's 1917 Second Battle of Gaza, and hundreds of Canadians fought in the General Allenby-led Third Battle of Gaza. They employed significant amounts of chemical weapons. Canada armed the Zionist regime in the years after it ethnically cleansed 750,000 Palestinians. The weapons deliveries continued even after the IDF launched a number of murderous raids into Gaza and Egypt that left dozens dead in 1954 and 1955. After the Israeli regime invaded Egypt with the British and French in 1956, Foreign Affairs Minister Lester Pearson wanted to take Gaza away from Egyptian administration and make it UN-controlled. This proposal was rejected by the Arab countries because it would have made it more difficult to expose Israeli regime aggression on Palestine. Syria's spokesperson at the UN complained that the representative of Canada is deftly supporting the Zionist policy. Between 1967 and 2005, the fake regime of Israel formally occupied Gaza. Soon after withdrawing, the Israeli regime imposed a blockade which has restricted food and medicine entering the tiny coastal territory. Today, 2 million Palestinians live in a giant prison cut off from the world by the Israeli regime military. Canada has enabled the fake regime of Israel's siege of Gaza. After Hamas won legislative elections in 2006, Canada was the first country to impose sanctions against the Palestinians. Ottawa's aid cutoff and refusal to recognize a Palestinian unity government was designed to sow division within Palestinian society. It helped spur fighting between the factions. When Hamas took control of Gaza, the fake regime of Israel used that to justify its siege of the coastal territory. Canada has refused to criticize the Israeli regime's brutal blockade. For example, Canada was the only country at the UN Human Rights Council to vote against a January 2008 resolution that called for urgent international action to put an immediate end to the siege of the occupied Gaza Strip. The motion was adopted with 30 votes in favor and 15 abstentions. In November 2011, the Canadian boat to Gaza set sail to challenge Israeli regime's illegal blockade. The Israeli regime navy captured the Canadian flagged boat in international waters, a violation of international law, with no protest from Ottawa. Instead, Foreign Affairs criticized the political humanitarian mission and the Canadians imprisoned, tasered, and robbed by Israelis. In 2009, Ottawa barred British parliamentarian George Galloway from Canada for delivering humanitarian aid to Gaza officials who were the elected administration in this territory. Similarly, the International Relief Fund for the Afflicted and Needy lost its charitable status and was the first ever Canadian-based group designated a terrorist organization for engaging in the ghastly act of supporting orphans and a hospital in Gaza through official channels. The Toronto-based organization tried to send a dialysis machine to Gaza and continued to support orphans in the impoverished territory with the money channeled through the post office controlled by the telecommunications ministry. Canada also legitimized the Zionist regime siege of Gaza by directly participating in it. In 2009, Canada joined the Gaza Counter-Arms Smuggling Initiative alongside the Netherlands, France, Germany, Norway, Denmark, Italy, and the US. We look forward to continuing to work with our partners on the program of action to coordinate efforts to stop the flows of arms, ammunition, and related material into the Gaza Strip, then Foreign Affairs Minister Lawrence Cannon said in a statement. As it has locked up Gaza's population, the fake regime of Israel has launched a series of deadly wars in 2009, 2014, 2021, etc. In 2018-19, 200 Palestinians were killed and another 5,000 injured by live fire in peaceful march of return protests in Gaza. About 5,000 Palestinians have been martyred by the fake regime of Israel in Gaza during the past 15 years. Ottawa has generally ignored or justified the Zionist regime's killing. The Trudeau government has so far failed to condemn the Israeli regime's latest outbursts of violence. Canadians of conscience must, at minimum, condemn the Israeli regime's violence against the long-besieged Palestinians in Gaza and call on the government to do the same.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, my dear friends, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a new episode of Back to Reality. Hope you're doing great and everything is just fine with you. Now that we have your precious attention, buckle up to fly beyond the surface of your favorite topics. You are listening to Arab English Radio, and this is Asma, at your service as the host. Well, as for our dear guest, I should say today is heaven. I have two of my very dear, amazing friends, and together we'd provide some captivating, thought-provoking stuff for you. And I forgot to tell you that both of them are Zainab, so I shall add that S. I'll use Zainab.
Yes.
However, okay. I'm Zainab Sadat. You can call me Zainab Sadat,
yes,
in order
Zainab.
To differentiate.
Yes, now that you introduced yourself, please give us a little bit more about yourself.
Okay, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I'm Zainab Sadat. I have my BA in English Language and Literature and my MA in Teaching English as a Foreign Language. And
so great.
And of course, one of my big interests is in religious studies. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because of my interest and my studies that I have the privilege of sitting in front of you today.
Oh, no, then on the other side, I have my dear one, Zainab.
Zainab Askari. Yes. Assalamu alaikum.
And you, Zainab, please give us a bit about your field of study.
Okay. Well, I have done my master's in linguistics from India.
Yes.
And then I am still engaged in religious studies in the Hausa of Qom as
so
of now.
So I am over exhilarated to be with both of you.
Thank you.
I'm sure we're going to set the table on fire. So as we just grow older, we start to have some role models. We start to take different things as our guides. And they turn out to be what they call life guides. They would lead us throughout our lives. When we talk of guides, it's not going to turn into a good guide. It's not going to be something that would help us to grow and flourish. Sometimes we have a wrong notion in our brain and we stick to it without going back and looking what exactly is the component of that thinking, of that guide, of that role model, call it whatever you wish. Now, we are going to talk on the importance of these guides in our lives. Ever since you were a child, have you ever happened to have a hero, a role model?
Of course. I would say yes. Well, as a child, I think throughout my journey, I am 30 right now, so 30, 31. So in all these 31 years, I would say that I would have had one life guider who guided me. So they have been different people. Like as I was a child, I saw my uncle. Mm-hmm. And I would see him making a fort, and I would like to be like him making a fort in the life. Or he taught me a lot of things in my life. So because I was not, my both parents were working, so I was not with them. I was not living with my parents for a long time. So since I was 9 till
so
I was...
So he turned into your life guider.
Yes, he turned into my life guider, like looking at him, teaching me things, showing me things, making me realize about the
and
outside
world.
And
has it ever happened to you that say to yourself, oh, what a mistake I did. He's not such a good person to be my guide.
I wouldn't say that I regretted what kind of a mistake it was. Oh my God. But I always have seen that I wish the life guiders I met later in my life, I wish I had these guiders since the very beginning of my life. But I owe a big thank you to everyone. As Imam Ali al-Islam puts it, I am servant to every person who taught me even a single word.
Yeah.
So, yes, I personally am very grateful to everyone. I'm not regretting why this particular person was my life guide at a particular time. But the life guides who I met later in my life, I really feel like I wish I met them
earlier,
back
in time.
Back in the time. My life would have been pretty different. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you later who they were if Zainab Sadat wants to put something.
Well, talking about my hero, the one who guided me in my life, what I'm going to say might seem cliche somehow, but my mother is
So as the mother is the daughter.
My mother is the person who taught me a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
She made me realize my mistakes. She made me see how to be good. She taught me how to be good. Of course, I didn't take most of her lessons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a good person as the one as I wanted to be. You know, lots of mistakes of mine have been just discerned by her.
Mm-hmm.
And she made me realize lots of things and taught me lots of things as well.
So that's very great.
And you know, as it is for most of the daughters.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of the girls, some of the mothers and daughters have more close relationship. And I think I was one of those group mm-hmm. of girls whose mother was their friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I would say the one who guided me was my dad.
Your dad?
Yeah. And when I grew up, I started to share that bond with my siblings. Mm-hmm. And my older brother also became a source of inspiration for me. And good. I'm always proud to look at him as my guide. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the sort of mentality he has is what they call outside the box. He usually thinks outside the box, and it's sort of very interesting for me to learn new concepts from him. He always sheds light on sort of things that I've never thought about.
A new aspect. He sees new aspects of
a new perspective.
I really love this.
That's very nice. We'll be back in no time. Dear audience, stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So now, as we grow older, just as I said at the beginning, when we are young, we have some very simple, as you just said, simple, ordinary guys like dad, mother, siblings, family, yeah. whatever. But when we grow older, things start to change. When you go to university...
Like this changed for me.
yeah. When you go to university, you would read more of books. And okay. those books are specialized into some very different directions that you have never thought before. So sometimes they're going to open some windows that are pretty much dangerous. And you can see it in different aspects of life. There are people who have got some notions that are mostly wrong, but they're not aware of the wrong things that they are following. So let's talk about this point. The point that people study, they put their books on the pedestal, or a sort of a special person, book, whatever. Help me with the other points,
mentor
with the items.
Some mentor.
Yeah, mentors, of course. That's very true. Whatever that they put into pedestal without looking beyond the curtains.
Yes.
Without having an overview of what is happening to them. And they follow that, just like a life guide that we had in our childhood. They grow with that notion as well. Now, I don't say that having a life guide is a wrong thing, but I say that on and on, you have to have an overlook upon that. You know what I mean? You have to check it. You have to check that the thing that you're following is actually true and is leading you into salvation.
That's what I was telling you. Like the life guides I met later in the life, I was realizing I wish I met them back in the time and my life would have been pretty different. For example, this time, at this point of my time, as a child or as a youth, when I was so much rebellious, energetic and all, I would have not been as much forgiving as I'm right now.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But I am pretty forgiving right now.
Yes, and
if people break up with me, I try to make up with them very soon. Like within, I guess, I think I try to start from myself, putting all ego aside. Just recently, it was the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Baqir al-Islam. And on that day, I messaged everyone, whosoever did wrong with me. I messaged a hadith from Imam Baqir al-Islam that he is depressed and sad with both of the parties who break up for more than 3 days. He's disappointed with both of them. Whosoever I was disappointed with.
So your
with also.
Life guides are Ahlul Bayt alayhim
as-salam. Of course. Like why I said I wish I met them back in the time, because these are the perfect beings. These are the perfect mm-hmm. life guiders. In terms of forgiving, it's Imam Baqir al-Islam. In terms of knowledge, it's Imam Baqir al-Islam.
So even if going to pick life guides, we have to pick ones.
I have a particular, whatever thing I have in my life, if I have a particular quality, it's related to a particular Imam. For example, if I want to give away something from my home, if I want to do charity and all, I would look back to Imam Hassan al-Islam, who gave up his property for more than twice.
Yeah,
like
that's very nice.
It's hard to give one thing that you really like, but it's really, you can't even imagine to give away entire property.
Yeah.
So when you want to give, I look back at Imam Hasan al-Islam, and that makes it really easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because things that you really like, it's very hard to give away. Things that you dislike, yeah. You don't need, it's very easy to give away. When I want to stand against oppressors, my life guide is Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
That is very
when
nice
I want to be now. When I want to be a courageous speaker, my life guide is Imam Ali alayhi salam and Lady Fatima, the Zahra salam alayhi. When I want to be a best hijabi, my life guide is Lady Fatima. So at every point of my life, wherever I want to be a good person,
yeah.
I don't see it beyond this Ahlul Bayt. I mean,
perfect,
these are the perfect
actually.
Examples, perfect life guiders yeah. of your life. I want to be pity. I want to apply taqwa in my life. I would like look at Imam Jawad alayhi salam.
Zainab Sadat, I have this question for you, which might sound a little bit of difficult, but
okay.
I'm sure you can handle that.
I hope so.
Of course. Do we pick the life guides or they pick us?
The question has different answers and it can be viewed from different dimensions
yeah.
as well. You know, the environment that you must not neglect, the influence that the environment has on you and the role that it has as your guide life, as the guide of your life. You know, as it is in our real life, we have our friends
mm-hmm.
who could be important source of inspiration for us. The social media, the family you are grown up
so
with.
So it is not us the one who picks the life guide.
All these items, they influence us in the way that in subconscious way.
Exactly. That's
mm-hmm.
what I'm after, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just you and your personal thinking that is going to choose the life guide for you. The environment you're living, the people you're surrounded with, the education you've been through.
Yes, you must not neglect them.
They
all, even not knowing them, they would influence you.
Exactly.
Yes.
Unconsciously.
So
you are not aware, but actually
mm-hmm.
somebody else is picking the life guide for you.
Yes, and that is why in lots of hadith, we have heard about the importance of choosing the friend, the good company.
Mm-hmm.
These all have positive effects on us. And
actually,
they act
the
as
community
a
you pick has got a lot to do with your thinking, with your
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
guiding.
And they, you know what? And they compose and they make your experiences. I wanted to continue Zainab's criteria, and another criteria and another source of guidance would be our experience.
Uh-huh,
you know,
yeah.
when we stay in an environment which is positive, which is full of good people,
mm-hmm.
good consultants, our experiences would be good and they would be beneficial for us. And that's the point.
But we should take that into consideration as well, that sometimes maybe our experience is not a mature one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should not pin so much of trust
and
on
definitely
that.
Definitely there are mistakes. You know, we are human beings.
Yeah.
We make mistakes.
Yeah, we're
and
not
the
infallible.
Point is that we must learn from our mistakes. We must learn
that
from
is
our
the
experience.
Point.
And sometimes
yes.
even these mistakes are life guiders, you know.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. That's
yes,
very true.
Yes, that's quite true.
Just as we come to this conclusion together, it's time to finish today's episode. Thank you too for being here with me and lending me a helping hand with this topic. And thank you, dear listeners, for sticking around.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi,
التي وما رايز again. Let us see daylight again once again.
IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. After a committee investigating the January 6, 2021 Capitol riots has held 5 hearings, there is still a question as to just how much damage the hearings will actually do to former President Donald Trump. The analysis article you're about to hear has been written by the Newsweek journalist Ewan Palmer. The article has been published by Newsweek and is titled, Have the January 6 hearings hurt Donald Trump? After the committee investigating the January 6, 2021 Capitol riots has held 5 hearings, there is still a question as to just how much damage the hearings will actually do to former US President Donald Trump. The House Select Committee, which has spent a year investigating the events which led up to the Capitol riot, has been building up to proceedings in the weeks and months before the first live televised presentation, promising to deliver evidence that some hoped would force the Department of Justice to act and charge the former president. However, there is no guarantee that Attorney General Merrick Garland will take the unprecedented step and charge the former president Donald Trump with a crime over his alleged attempts to overturn the 2020 election results or incitement of his supporters to storm the Capitol as a last-ditch attempt to hold on to power. Even if no charges are brought against Donald Trump or any of his allies, there is still hope from the panel that their findings could at least prevent Trump from running for office again for allegedly inciting an insurrection or ruining the former president's reputation entirely by reminding the American people of his actions and rhetoric before the attack on 6th of January 2021. However, this is not the first time that Donald Trump has faced a potential legacy-destroying hearing over the past 6 years. Donald Trump is the only president of the United States to be impeached twice, with the Senate voting to acquit Trump both times, and the former president also survived special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russia collusion during the 2016 presidential election. This is on top of the seemingly endless run of scandals and controversies which dogged Donald Trump over the years, from the Access Hollywood recordings to the emboldening of far-right groups and handling of the coronavirus outbreak. Speaking to Newsweek, Thomas Gift, founding director of University College London's Center for US Politics, described Donald Trump as a Teflon president while in office, and that there is nothing to suggest that his ability to avoid scandals from sticking to him has lessened since 6th of January 2021 or the subsequent live hearings. Trump's grip over the Republican Party may have loosened somewhat, but he's still by far the most dominant figure within the party. So despite the enormity of the evidence proving Trump's malfeasance, the odds that the MAGAverse will abandon him in response to the 6th of January hearings are essentially zero, Thomas Gift said. Gift added, it appears Republican voters may only be viewing the hearings as a replay of impeachment 2.0, where Trump was accused of inciting the attack, or as yet another witch hunt and political smokescreen designed to take down Joe Biden's most likely opponent in 2024. Democrats may be glued to the television, enraptured by every new detail unfolding in the hearings, but their minds were set against Trump anyway. For all those reasons, it's hard to see the January 6 hearings budging public opinion towards Trump even a little, Thomas Gift said. In order to build pressure against Trump, the panel already knew that they must present new findings that are not already public knowledge, such as how often Donald Trump falsely declared he was the winner of the last election. The committee was also aware that they needed to maintain the public's interest in the congressional hearings. In order to do so, they brought in former ABC News television executive and documentary filmmaker James Goldstone to help turn the proceedings into a captivating presentation suitable for primetime television. The move appears to have paid off. The first live primetime hearing on 9th of June attracted 20 million viewers across the news networks, according to Nielsen ratings. However, those numbers have started to fall, albeit with the subsequent hearings not being played in primetime slots. The first daytime hearing on 13th of June was watched by 13 million Americans, with the third on 16th of June falling further still to around 9 million Americans. The ratings appear to be backed by some opinion polls which suggest the American public is not as interested in the hearings as they go on. An Ipsos opinion poll conducted after the third hearing found that just two-thirds of Americans, or 66%, are not following the hearing closely or closely at all, compared to 33% who said they are keeping top of proceedings very or somewhat closely. However, a Quinnipiac University national opinion poll released on Wednesday, 22nd of June, gave an opposing view. The survey found that a majority of the American public say they are following the January 6 hearings either very closely, 26%, or somewhat closely, 32%. Where the hearings appear to be having a detrimental effect on Donald Trump is the view on whether he should be charged with a criminal offence over the January 6 attack. According to the recent Ipsos ABC News opinion poll, nearly 6 in 10 Americans, or 58%, think Donald Trump should be charged with a crime for his role in the 6th of January riot. Another survey conducted by Navigator Research also found that 54% of the American public support the idea of the Department of Justice indicting the former President Donald Trump in connection with the Capitol riot. David Niven, a political science professor at the University of Cincinnati in Ohio, said that The fact that the January 6 hearings are able to focus entirely on Trump's efforts to overturn the election results could be what damages Trump. Ironically, one of Trump's great political strengths is that there are so many things wrong with him that it is hard to hold people's focus on just one thing for any length of time. David Niven told Newsweek, "Each session is a reminder that Trump lied, Trump connived, and ultimately Trump unleashed a torrent of violence against innocent people trying to lawfully do their jobs." However, Krista Ramey, co-founder of the Los Angeles-based civil litigation firm Ramey Law PC, does not believe that the January 6 hearings are hurting the former president at all, especially within the Republican Party. His group of followers are within their own echo chamber, calling the hearings a witch hunt and not bothering to watch them, so it's very unlikely to move the needle with them, Ramey told Newsweek. Republicans, who aren't necessarily Trump supporters, are much more likely to be swayed by the evidence presented in the hearings. But there's definitely a ceiling on how many Republicans will be swayed, she continued. The fact that viewership of the hearings has been modest also provides an indication that there is a ceiling on how much of the public even cares at this point. Clark Cunningham, a professor of law at Georgia State University, said the issue is not whether Donald Trump's reputation is damaged by the proceedings, but whether authorities believe he committed a crime. The question is going to be, will people be open-minded about the evidence that's been presented in these hearings? Clark Cunningham said, "The battleground is not so much did Trump win or not. Was there fraud or not? Now the battleground is, what did Trump do?" he said. "He didn't just talk about his belief that there had been fraud. He put into motion a scheme which a judge in California has described as a criminal act." But will the House hearings lead to criminal trial for Donald Trump? Ultimately, it doesn't matter if the live televised hearings ratings fall and people begin to tune out of the proceedings, or if opinion polls on Trump slightly differ in the wake of the 6th of January hearings. What matters is if the committee persuades the Department of Justice that Donald Trump committed a number of crimes during his attempts to overturn the election results in the run-up to the 6th of January attack. In his opening remarks on 9th of June, the chairman of the committee, Representative Benny Thompson, described January 6 as the culmination of an attempted coup, which was Donald Trump's most desperate chance to prevent Joe Biden from becoming president. The committee has shown that Donald Trump knew, or that he should have known, that the 2020 election was free and fair, Ramey said. It has shown the pressure Trump put on Vice President Mike Pence and on state officials to violate their oaths of office, and it has shown the deadly consequences of the whirlwind of hate that Donald Trump set into motion, she said. The evidence presented in these hearings meets the burden of proof necessary to result in charges against Trump.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.